can't stay silent either about April 24th or about Armenia today. In fact, we're going to be talking about a monument that pays tribute to both. It's not something you'd expect. In fact, it's about a dream that you've dreamt, but maybe haven't figured it out yet. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, looking at life through the oldest fabrics of Christianity, Armenian Orthodoxy, and I'm inviting you to take a look with us today. This is episode number 516 of The Next Step. Let's take it right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Since 2008, these next steps have been taken toward and for the disenfranchised members of the church community, as well as for those searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, as well as for the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Are you still holding your breath? Okay, just relax right now. You're going to have to let go of your breath very slowly. What I'm about to tell you right now is going to just, I don't know. I don't want you to lose consciousness right now, okay? So let go and take some breaths and relax, okay? I'm ready? Ready? I know this is going to, this is a big one, okay? Okay, April 24th, 2018. The Armenian Genocide Commemoration, 103rd anniversary. Are you ready for this news? President Donald Trump did not call it a genocide. I know. Yeah, and I tell you, you're going to be very, very disappointed about that. In fact, wait a minute. You know what he called it? The Meds Yeren. The great tragedy. The great atrocity. Oh, man. Are we happy or what? Anyway, if you have tuned in to find out whether or not Trump acknowledges it or not, you've tuned into the wrong podcast, because who cares? You know, who cares? Trump, wow, you know, like he's going to do something different, right? You would think so, right? The French president was with him on April 24th. And France, and in fact, the French president just went ahead and acknowledged it right in front of Trump. But Trump called it the Meds Yeren, the great tragedy, and everybody got excited about it, and some in both directions. You know what? Who cares? Wrong podcast if you care about that. I do care about how we are reacting to these kind of things. And for that reason, if you've tuned into this podcast to find out about some logical steps about how to move forward, how to put your feet in the shoes of others, well, then you've tuned into the right place, because today I'm going to be talking about dreams, and not the kind of dreams that are interpreted, but I'm going to be talking about dreaming, about keep dreaming and still dreaming in the context of the Armenian Genocide, because it happens to be the 50th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide Martyrs Monument. Now, this is a monument that's in Montebello. That's down here in Southern California. And what's unique, and I know I don't want to make it Southern California-centric, this podcast, but what is unique about it, it was the first monument in the United States, and it laid the groundwork for other monuments to come. Unique about this monument was that it was, I don't know if it still is the only one, but for many, many years, decades, it was the only monument that was on public space. You can have a monument on your church property, on your private property, on your home. You could build an arad on your front lawn. That's your private house. That's your private yard. You could do that. But this is on public property in Bicknell Park in Montebello, California. That's about, I'd say about 10 miles east of Los Angeles. And I want to share some ideas and some thoughts and some insights about it. First of all, because I was there as a young kid when it first opened. Secondly, because my father was instrumental in making that monument happen. I want to share some ideas with you because it's more than just a monument going up. It's just more than the idea of remembering the genocide. In that story, I think we have a lesson about dreaming, about hope. And actually, it was a few days ago that I was thinking about this message. What is the message that we're going to be giving? Because I was going to be celebrating the Divine Liturgy in Boise, Idaho. By the way, we went up there and it was kind of really, really, really cool. Beautiful place, Boise, Idaho. And nice Armenian community who was using the facility of the Greek Orthodox Church. And I will leave it at that. No comment either way. Okay, figure out. Fill in the blanks on that one, okay? So we were up in Boise, Idaho, and just about ready to celebrate with them. But the feeds were coming in. We were reading about what's going on in Armenia, the upheaval, the demonstrations, the protests on the street. And it's very difficult because you want to be able to give a message that's pertinent to the situation and the day, because April 24th, you've got genocide commemoration, but at the same time, you've got some reality that's happening. People are on the brink of revolution, and the prime minister and people getting arrested. Anyway, long story short, I was thinking about the concept of hope. How do you describe hope? And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be awful if we lost hope of the future? And I thought to myself, you know, that is redundant, isn't it? Hope of the future, that phrase. What else are you going to hope for? Hope for the past? Hope for today? No, hope is hope. It automatically implies the future. Hope implies that there's something ahead. So it's on this idea of hope that dreaming is based on, right? If you dream, you hope for things. So you're going to hear in a few minutes when I'll be reading and sharing with you my homily from April 24th. And in it, I talk about dreaming and about hoping. So that's coming up in just a few minutes. But let me say that we were up in Idaho, and the connector flight for this, Idaho was an hour difference time-wise. The connector flight on the way back had to stop in Portland, Oregon. And it's something that I'll never forget, because we left Idaho and had to get up at 3:30 in the morning to get on a shuttle at 4 o'clock in the morning. And with the time change, I was more like getting up at 2:30 in the morning to get on a shuttle at 3 o'clock. Anyway, we got to the airport in Boise, Idaho. It has to be the absolute best airport in the world. You know why? Because there's nobody there. There's no lines. You just walk up to the plane and there it is. It was just very relaxed, very mellow. I don't know if it was the time of the day or if it was Boise, Idaho itself. Anyway, we get on the plane and we arrive in Portland, Oregon at 5:30 in the morning. When I say we, I was traveling with a deacon. The Archbishop had given me a deacon to celebrate the liturgy with in Boise. And it was a beautiful, beautiful liturgy. Very moving to me that in a place like Boise, Idaho, you would find a group of people that were so receptive to not only the liturgy, but to God's fulfillment of promises through that liturgy. And that's really a story for another day. But we landed in Portland, Oregon. And when right after you land, the pilot or the attendants tell you, you may now turn on your phones, or you could take them off of airplane mode because we have landed. And this is what I'll never forget. We turned off the airplane mode, and so all of a sudden your texts come through. And now who's going to be texting you at 5:30 in the morning? Well, if you're getting feeds from Twitter, boom, 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 they just started coming in. And there was just a whole slew of them, and they were just ringing and vibrating. And it was the news that the prime minister in Armenia, Serge Sarkisian, who used to be the president and moved over to prime minister in an attempt to elongate his reign over Armenia, he had resigned. And there was all kinds of celebrations on the street. So we are in a plane in Portland, taxiing towards the gate and watching and listening to different feeds coming in from Armenia. And this was really, it really tells you something about the day and time we're living in. You know, you're sitting in a plane and you're connected with a group of people, and you're connected with their pain and their suffering at the same time, connected with their celebration. It was a very, very moving morning, to say the least. And we, in the Portland airport, we were there for a 2-3 hour layover. We had a chance to catch up on all the news. And this was just a couple days before we were getting out there to be at the genocide commemoration in Burbank at the Western Diocese at the St. Leon Sur Pozrevontians Mother Church, Mother Cathedral. So I was very, very honored that the Archbishop had asked me to give the homily on that day of all days, you know, April 24th. And it was an opportunity to connect dots for me, not only with the 103rd anniversary of the genocide, but also with the 50th anniversary of this structure, the monument coming up. And that's what I want to share with you today. Before that, we did a lot of traveling this past couple weeks. I hope you've been following the blogs and following the pictures, but we had some great, great opportunities, especially Monday night, I have to tell you. It was a very moving evening at our Bible study, because what I did is we started looking at the stories of the saints, those people who had given up their lives during the genocide. Up until this point had been called martyrs, but on the 100th anniversary, the church declared them as saints. So that martyrdom actually played into them being the heroes, being the victors, not victims. They're very important. No longer victims, but victors in Christ. And this is, it's going to take a while for us to get used to it, because we are still victimized ourselves. And case in point is that we were actually waiting, that there are people who were waiting for Trump to acknowledge the genocide. That is being a victim, right? You're looking for somebody else to acknowledge your reality. Can you believe that? The genocide happened. I don't need anybody else to validate it or to acknowledge that it happened. It did. It's a reality. You don't need people to validate reality. It's like, think about the African American experience, okay? Coming over here as slaves, somebody today, 400 years later, saying, well, maybe they just decided to buy some tickets on some cruise ships and came over here. Why are they here? They were here because of slavery. Well, I'm going to look into it and see if we should use that word, because we're not sure. Can you imagine somebody saying that? Are they crazy or not? Who would put up with that? Who would put up with that? It's a reality. You don't question it. It's a reality. The same way with the Holocaust, right? Hitler killing off 6 million Jews. Holocaust, a big fire, right? Well, let's see. Maybe it didn't happen that way. And maybe who would put up with that? Who would allow that conversation to happen? But when it comes to the Armenian genocide, 1.5 million people are dead. We have the shrines in the sands of the desert. We have 1.5 million people in exile after 1915. We have documentation by the ambassador, who is an eyewitness, sitting there right there. And well, let's see. You know what? We're going to look into it. What do you mean look into it? And this is what I was saying at the beginning. I'm sorry if I caught you with a little bit of sarcasm at the beginning. But who's holding their breath? Tragically, up until now, there are still people holding their breath, waiting that somebody else will validate a reality. Come on, folks. Get over it. This is what I'm going to be talking about coming up after the song, talking about dreaming, about the importance of dreaming, about having hope, And this is whether you're talking about as Armenians, whether you're talking collective consciousness, or you're talking about yourself individually. There's a message in here for all of us. Right now, I'm going to take a break right now with the song of the day, something picked out especially for today, and be back in a couple moments, and then we'll listen about dreaming in a very special dream that you won't expect where that dream is coming from. Okay? That one you can hold your breath for. Here's the song of the day.
El hechi go Antsatsore Եվ լույս չիտա հանգած մոմը Արդար երկինք ես ինչ եղան Հսկած ծավը ներս մտավ Կարդ եմ կերը հերանում են Ես մնում եմ ով է տերը Ամեն արը ինձ Այծար մտքերս ինձ լկում են բանտիս պատերը արտասվում են հանգիս թողեք ինձ կեղծավորներ պարդ խոզեր վայրի շներ կարդ են կերը ինձ տաղում են ես մնում եմ Ժպտում եմ բոլորին Ափսոս մարդ չկա Ափսոս բան չկա
Kar Demker, off of the Yeraz album, by the multi-talented Gor Mkhitaryan. Unmistakable voice, unmistakable talent, too. Just wanted to play that with, for you today. We're talking about dreams. It happens to come off of his Yeraz Dream album. I was tempted to go with the song Yeraz, but there are so many great, great songs with dream in there and Yeraz in their titles and their words. And I heard this one, and this one just kind of like flowed with the theme of today and a little bit of concepts of, well, a lot of things that you could imagine in there. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. There will be a link on today's show notes, and you could check out not only this song, but all of the great works that come from Gor Mkhitaryan. We are talking about dreams, and with that, let's get into it.
Everybody's looking
I am so glad that you are with us today, because if you probably read the show notes or read the title, you said, ah, it's another one of those dreamy kind of subjects, and maybe I could pass on this one. So I'm glad you haven't passed, and you're already at this point in the podcast. We're over halfway through. I'm going to share with you something a little bit different, something that you may not expect. Well, of course, if you expected it, wouldn't be on the next step, right? I mean, you come to expect the unexpected on the next step, and I hope this will do the trick as well. This happens to be my homily. I gave this a couple days ago on April 24th at the St. Leon, Mother Cathedral in Burbank, California, and It is a reflection not only on the Armenian Genocide commemoration, but a reflection on a very special dream, a dream of a monument that got constructed in Montebello, California. But even more than just this building, it's about a dream that has been with us for centuries. So let me begin by first saying that it was truly an honor to be offering this homily. And I want to thank His Eminence Archbishop Hovnan Derderian, the Primate of the Western Diocese, for giving me this very special honor and privilege this evening. It is with a thankful heart that we gather this evening and we experience yet another chapter in Armenian history opening up in front of us with developments of the last several days. We are thankful that transitions are taking place in Armenia without bloodshed or violence. While we gather here this evening remembering the atrocities of 1915 and all the ramifications, we are well aware of the difficulties our brothers and sisters are enduring in the homeland. We know of their sufferings and the makings of the political system, and so I was up against a difficult set of circumstances in regard to my position this evening. The magnitude of the demonstrations that took place this past week, and especially this past weekend, left me wondering about the direction of my remarks and the message of this sermon. Obviously, there is no staying silent either about April 24th or about Armenia today. And so the homily I wish to offer this evening is to give honor and respect to both of these realities. I have chosen to speak about dreams, about dreaming as individuals and as a collective, and to speak about a very special dream that came our way in 1968, namely the opening of the Armenian Martyrs Monument in Montebello. It was unveiled exactly 50 years ago. I speak about dreams because one of the realities that I have noted in my life, and I'm sure you have noted as well, is that the saddest people I have ever met are those people who have no dreams. They are people who have no hope, whether because of loss, disease, separation, desperation, they have lost hope. They no longer dream of better days. And the ability to dream is one of the most beautiful aspects of our humanity, dreaming and where our dreams can lead. That's what the Turks tried to destroy, to debilitate us by taking away our intelligentsia, our leadership, taking away the writers, the poets, the priests on April 24th. What they were doing was taking away the dream, taking away hope. Our story as Armenians living in the diaspora did not occur in a vacuum. There are many factors that played into how we remember our past and how we celebrate our todays. I'd like to share with you some experiences from my childhood. It's a story that doesn't often get told, the plight of the first generation of Armenian settlers here in the United States. Not too far away, the 1960s decade was a turbulent one in the United States. It was marked by accomplishments and tragedies that would reverberate for years, decades, and now, a half a century later, the effects of the 1960s are still being felt. The 60s began with the election of one of the youngest and most vibrant presidents of the United States. In John Kennedy, people saw hope because he was a dreamer. They saw courage and the ability to achieve the impossible opportunities. He promised to put a man on the moon before the end of the decade, and it happened. His dreams led the people. He established by executive order the Peace Corps. But unfortunately, what people of my generation remember most about Kennedy was that an assassin's bullet in 1963 left many of his dreams unfulfilled. Civil rights was in full swing in the 1960s. We were fighting a horrible war in a place called Vietnam, and the images of mayhem were being piped into our living rooms on the five channels that our television sets had at the time. Meanwhile, in America, race relations were exploding. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. set the tone for dreaming on the principles he had learned from the gospel of Christ. He dreamed there would come a day when people of the world could put aside their differences and focus on the common thread of humanity. He dreamed of a day when we would not be judged by the color of our skin or our ethnic makeup, but rather on the content of our character. New dreamers were coming along, one of which was the slain president's younger brother, Robert Kennedy. It was in that America that people began to feel comfortable with their skins, with their backgrounds and their history. Ethnic pride was highlighted with statements such as "Black is beautiful," encouraging men and women to stop trying to eliminate ethnic traits by straightening their hair or attempting to lighten or bleach their skin. In that climate of expressing ethnic pride, the Hispanic community adopted a saying, "Brown is beautiful," and we Armenians followed suit. 50 years after our genocide, we knew the time had come and the time was right to tell our story. In the early 1960s, our churches were at the center of our communities. Armenian schools were dreams that were becoming realities. My mother, as a first-generation daughter of survivors, had just authored an Armenian-American textbook for learning basic Armenian conversations. It was published by the Western Diocese and was being used in the Saturday schools of the churches. In 1965, I had just turned 9 years old when the Armenians in Los Angeles organized a march. Yes, this is it, the first one. 3,000 marchers began at St. Sophia Greek Orthodox Cathedral on Pico and Normandy and ended up at the Ambassador Hotel on Wilshire Boulevard. After the march, the dream was articulated. We needed a place in Los Angeles area where Armenians could gather and commemorate the Armenian genocide. In a sense, that Ambassador Hotel on Wilshire was the place where the dream was first dreamt. A group of dedicated Americans of Armenian descent, representing all different aspects of the community, came together in the spirit of unity and organized the Monument Council. For the record, the original Monument Committee was recognized on a plaque at the monument. Alphabetically, they are Hagop Abdulian, Hrant Agbabian, Krikor Ayvazian, Hagop and Marilyn Arshaguni, Vartan Fundukian, Harmik Hagopian, Richard Hovanisian, Oshin Keshishian, George Mandosian, Hagop Manjikian, Michael Minasian, Vaskin Minasian, Bob Movil, Hagop Nazarian, Misak Sevacherian, Jivan Tabibian, and Varojan Movsesian, my father. My father was one of those dreamers. After 3 years of dreaming, deliberating, planning, developing, organizing, fundraising, and fighting political obstacles, tremendous pressure of the Turkish lobby notwithstanding, the Armenian Genocide Martyrs Monument was waiting to be unveiled. The dream was about to become reality. Then in 1968, I was about to turn 12 years old, and the monument was about to open when on April 4th, the first of two tragic events were thought to bring an end to dreaming. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was struck down and killed in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King was 39 years old. Exactly 2 months later, Robert Kennedy was assassinated in cold blood at the Ambassador Hotel, the same hotel where the dream for the Armenian Monument began. Bobby Kennedy was 42. In the middle of these two horrific events, the Armenians in Los Angeles did not lose the dream. The Martyrs' Monument was unveiled on April 21st to a waiting and anxious public. That day was a true celebration for the Armenian community in particular, but even more for the entire community in general. This monument, erected by Americans of Armenian descent, says the inscription at its base, is dedicated to the 1.5 million Armenian victims of the genocide perpetrated by the Turkish government, 1915-1921, and to men and all nations who have fallen victim to crimes against humanity. You see, the Armenian story was bigger than us. The monument was tall, even bigger for us as little kids, reaching for the skies. It could not be hid, and neither could the crimes to which it was pointing be forgotten. The monument in Montebello was a dream come true for us. At age 12, in the midst of the struggle for human rights, wars, the counterculture movement, rebellion, revolution, rock and roll, this monument was standing there to give us meaning and definition. The Armenian community had its churches, its schools, its organizations, and now a monument, a statement which acknowledged the past in a grand manner. On the day of the opening, my father, along with other committee members, was busy taking care of details in the background. I remember he had handed me a camera to walk around that day and take pictures for posterity. There was a Turkish man standing on Garfield Avenue, on the road leading up to the monument. He was holding up a poster with demeaning and defaming words against the Armenian people. I remember taking the last picture of him holding that sign when a man named Lindy Avakian came up. Lindy Avakian was the author of Cross and the Crescent. He had interviewed Solomon Telerian. He came up and tore the poster in this man's face. Needless to say, the rest of the crowd sent the misguided man on his way. The opening of the monument was a monumental event, no pun intended. But little did we know that there was something greater coming, something unlike anything we could have imagined. Just a few weeks after the opening of the monument, on May 18, 1968, His Holiness Vazgen I of blessed memory, the Supreme Patriarch and Catholicos of all Armenians, arrived and blessed the monument and the community. This was something unseen for us and left an indelible mark on our psyche. From the Mother See of Holy Etchmiadzin, His Holiness brought with him two khachkars, cross stones, etched with the words of endurance, hope, resurrection, and victory. No, there weren't four words on that stone. There was just one word. On the khachkar, which was mounted and still is on the monument, was carved the word Etchmiadzin. While for many, Etchmiadzin is a name from history, the name of a place, for us, it was much more. I remember my dad telling me that day to gaze at the letters on the stone, beginning with the mighty E symbol. He said there was a secret message inscribed on that stone, a hidden message for dreamers to keep dreaming. It is the message of hope. And here, 50 years later, I am coming to understand what he meant in that cryptic message. You see, Etchmiadzin is the name of St. Gregory the Illuminator's dream. It's the beginning place of our Armenian soul and being. Etchmiadzin is a dream in which Christ descends and points to where the church of the Armenian people is to be built. Etchmiadzin literally means the descent of the only begotten, or very plainly, God is with us. Astvazant meze. It is that dream of Etchmiadzin that has kept us alive, a dream to acknowledge the one who said, I will never leave you. The one who said, in this world you will have much trouble and much tribulation, but courage. The victory is mine. I have overcome. I have conquered this world. On that historic date in 1968, at the footsteps of the monument, the venerable Catholicos Vazgen I, as the spiritual father of all Armenians, addressed his children and the general public. His words were met with thunderous applause and massive gratitude. From those dark days of 1915, an entire country was destroyed, an entire people was decapitated, said His Holiness. But just as Christ rose 3 days after death, 3 years after 1915, 1918, our independent Armenia had risen. He spoke it plainly. The Armenian people have resurrected, and we have a message for the world. Good is more powerful than evil. Light always overcomes the darkness. Dreams are what gives us hope and are meant to be dreamt until they are actualized. Today, we stand 103 years removed from a day that was supposed to have left us with only one Armenian propped up in a museum. April 24th, 1915, remembers the day the Turks went after the dream. By killing off the writers, the poets, the priests, the intellectuals, and the leadership, they thought they would kill the dream. Kill the dream and the people will lose hope and die. But our hope and our dream was greater. Etchmiadzin. Christ is with us. God is with us. That's a dream you can't kill. The monument of 50 years ago, with Etchmiadzin Khachkar at its base, continues to stand as a beacon of hope. Where you stand with a dream, there is hope. Our brothers and sisters in Armenia are standing together in defining the new course of a civilization. Ours is one of understanding and dreaming with them. I always mention that in looking at Armenia, not to be impatient, but let us dream of better days. Independence is only 26 years old. What was America 26 years after independence? There was slavery, there were struggles to define the limits and extent of democracy. Misunderstanding led to conflict, but it's the dream of America that kept living. And it keeps living, giving us hope. So today, let us continue to dream. It keeps hope alive. Dream the dream of Etchmiadzin. God is with us. The possibilities are endless. Look at the proof all around us. Each one of you here today is here because the dream has come true. Therefore, each of you is a monument to the dream. You have survived. We have survived. You know, if you think about it, we're an interesting group of people. We name our children things like revenge, vorej. But we also name our children names like resurrection, harutyun. Our revenge is in our resurrection. Tonight, look around you. For instance, here, there's a group from Gen X, young people who are dreaming, who are actualizing their dreams. We may have people here today who do not understand the language, but they certainly understand the heart. And that's the place where those dreams come from. Tonight, in celebrating the monument at age 50, let us celebrate the spirit of unity, of a community coming together. Let us celebrate dreams, however impossible they may seem, to become reality. Let us celebrate the lives of the crowned saints, the holy martyrs of our church, for the life they lived as living monuments to Etchmiadzin, to the fact that God is with us. May God bless the Armenian people. May God bless the Armenian nation.
Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for the announcement, and thank you for listening, for supporting. You know, as she was talking, it occurred to me that this next step, Epostle, what we're doing here, is a dream come true. We dreamt it. We believed in it. You dreamt it. You said you wanted something. You're with us. You're dreaming it with us, and we're talking that language of the heart. We may be talking different languages here and there, but we're talking a language of the heart, and that's where dreams begin with. So thank you. Thank you for helping us make this dream into a reality. That's what the next step is all about. And there is so much we're doing. There's so much that I want to share with you over the past few weeks, especially as I've been on the circuit here and there talking at different places. It's just been an eye-opener to see how important this message is, how people are receptive to the message of In His Shoes, realizing that it's not all about just remembering the past, but making that past real in our lives today, affecting and touching other people. You know, one of the images that I use at many of the stops I'm at, and especially when I'm talking with the young people, because it's an image that it's dated. People haven't seen it. They don't remember it. But it's the image of the three monkeys. See no evil, speak no evil, hear no evil. You know, the three monkeys covering their eyes, their ears, their mouth. And it's an important image because, you know, in 1915, believe it or not, between 1915 and 1918, 3 years, the first 3 years of the Armenian Genocide, there was more written in international press than there was written between the first 2003-2006, the first 3 years of the Darfuri genocide. There was more written about Armenian genocide. And yet, what was the reaction of the world? Hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Now, here we are, 100 years plus later. If we are doing the same, then we have, I mean, if we're not reacting to what's going on in the world, if we're doing the same, then we're no better. We have no reason to complain about the past. And our only hope is for us to open up our eyes, our ears, our mouth to what's going on in the world. And that's where In His Shoes comes in. It's doing really what we should be doing. It's the answer to genocide. It's the answer to genocide without violence, without bloodshed, but saying that let's do something good. That's what In His Shoes is about. And I thank you for your support. I thank you for your prayers. And I invite you to get involved with us. We're at all the usual spaces, In His Shoes, Facebook, Instagram. There's a young lady, Mariana. She's been doing an incredible job getting our Instagram and our Facebook feeds going. wonderful, wonderful work. So do follow them and bring your participation by commenting on them, by praying for us, and by supporting us. Those prayers are the greatest bit of support that you can give. And we'd love to hear from you. feedback@epostle.net. It's that simple. Epostle. Apostolic Evangelism with an E for an electronic and expanding universe. Listen, I want to thank you for joining us today on behalf of the team. Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer. This is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath. Cut out!